You couldn't not look, couldn't not be fascinated. None of us had ever pissed and howled over the roadmaster like poor old Mr. D, but on at least two occasions I had screamed. Oh, yes. I had damn near screamed my guts out, and the nightmares afterward. Man, oh, man. The storm had gone away to the south of us, except in a way it hadn't. In a way, it had been caged up inside of Shed B. From where we sat on the smoker's bench, we could see bright, soundless explosions of light going off inside. The row of windows in the roll-up door would be as black as pitch, and then they turned blue-white. And with each flash, I knew the radio and dispatch would give out another bray of static. Instead of showing 5:18 p.m., the clock on the microwave would be reading error. But on the whole, this wasn't a bad one. The flashes of light left after images, greenish squares that floated in front of your eyes, but you could look. The first three or four times that pocket storm happened, looking was impossible. It would have fried your eyes right out of your head. "Holy God!" Ned whispered. His face was long with surprise. No, that's too timid. It was shock I saw on his face that afternoon. Nor was shock the end of it. When his eyes cleared a little, I saw the same look of fascination I had seen on his father's face, on Tony's, Huddy's, Matt Bibicki's, and Phil Candleton's. And hadn't I felt it on my own face? It's how we most often appear when we confront the deep and authentic unknown, I think. When we glimpse that place where our familiar universe stops and the real blackness begins. Ned turned to me.
"Sandy, Jesus Christ, what is it? What is it?"
"If you have to call it something, call it a light quake. A mild one. These days, most of them are mild. You want a closer look?" He didn't ask if it was safe, didn't ask if it was going to explode in his face or bake the old sperm factory down below. He just said, "Yeah," which didn't surprise me in the least. We walked over, Ned and I in the lead, the others not far behind. The irregular flashes were very clear in the gloom of the late day, but they registered on the eye even in full sunshine. And when we first took possession, that was right around the time 3 Mile Island almost blew, now that I think about it. The Buick Roadmaster, in one of its throws, literally outshone the sun. "Do I need shades?" Ned asked as we approached the shed door. I could now hear the humming from inside, the same hum Ned's father had noticed as he sat behind the Buick's oversized wheel out at the Jenny station.
"Nah, just squint," Huddy said. "You would have needed shades in 79, though, I can tell you that."
"You bet your sweet ass," Arky said as Ned put his face to one of the windows, squinting and peering in.
I slotted myself in next to Ned, fascinated as always. Step right up, see the living crocodile. The roadmaster stood entirely revealed. The tarp it had somehow shrugged off, lying crumpled in a tan drift on the driver's side. To me it looked more like an object d'art than ever. That big old automotive dinosaur with its curvy lines and hardtop styling, its big wheels and sneer-mouth grill. "Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this evening's viewing of From a Buick 8. Just keep a respectful distance, because this is art that bites."